On this 21st day of June, 2011, in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized, Text 54. Arjuna uvacha.
Arjuna uvacha.
Chitta pragyasya ka bhasha.
Chitta pragyasya ka bhasha.
Samadhi stasya keshava.
Samadhi stasya
keshava. Stitadhi kim prabhasheta.
Stitadhi kim prabhasheta.
Kimasita vrajeta kim.
Kimasita vrajeta kim.
Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak, and what is his language? How does he sit, and how does he walk? Purport. As there are symptoms for each and every man, in terms of his particular situation, similarly, one who is Krishna conscious has his particular nature, talking, walking, thinking, feeling, etc. As a rich man has his symptoms by which he is known as a rich man, as a diseased man has his symptoms by which he is known as disease, or as a learned man has his symptoms, so a man in transcendental consciousness of Krishna has specific symptoms in various dealings. One can know his specific symptoms from the Bhagavad Gita. Most important is how the man in Krishna consciousness speaks, for speech is the most important quality of any man. It is said that a fool is undiscovered as long as he does not speak, and certainly a well-dressed fool cannot be identified unless he speaks. But as soon as he speaks, he reveals himself at once. The immediate symptom of a Krishna-conscious man is that he speaks only of Krishna and of matters relating to him. Other symptoms then automatically follow, as stated below. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chukshu Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Vidabe Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, in the last few verses, Krishna has emphasized the steady intelligence. This term buddhi yoga has been used several times, and it's more or less synonymous with bhakti yoga, but it emphasizes the steady intelligence. And we see the last verse, achala buddhis, in samadhi, when your mind is no longer disturbed, in flowery language of the Vedas, remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, you will have attained divine consciousness. In the previous verse, he says about you pass out of the dense forest of delusion. You should become your intelligence. When your intelligence is passed out, you'll become indifferent. So Krishna is emphasizing this kind of equipoise. Remember, he says, fight for the sake of fighting. Don't worry about victory or defeat, perfection or imperfection. So this general tendency of kind of being in samadhi is what's emphasized. And Arjuna is now pursuing that. And he's asking, well, what are the characteristics of one who has attained this state? And Krishna will now describe them. And at the end, he continues with this, so much so that at the beginning of the next chapter, he says, well, if you want me to be fixed in consciousness, and what do I need to fight the war for? You know, because he's emphasizing the buddhi instead of the karma. But then he makes it clear that both have to be there. In other words, the action in fixed consciousness is the ideal. So here, he emphasizes this point of speaking, because it's the words. You know, when you think about it, all of our books are really just results of speaking. Krishna speaking to Arjuna, and you look at this whole book. Or, you know, Sanjay is speaking to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, and the same thing is going on in the Bhagavatam. It's all simply speaking. It began with the word. You know, Krishna speaking to Brahma in his heart, right, enlighten him. The word, and Brahma then speaks to Narada. Narada then speaks to Vyasa, and down it comes through one speaking to another. So the essential quality that reveals the consciousness that one is in is how he speaks and what he speaks of. So that's Prabhupada makes that point here. So our own speech is also a critical factor. One of the main impediments to progress is this prajalpa, is talking about things other than Krishna. Because it's sure and certain, as soon as you talk about those things, and as soon as you listen to that talk, your buddhi, your intelligence, will be drawn away from Krishna. You'll be thinking of something else. So one of the great characteristics that anyone who studies Srila Prabhupada's life will notice is that he was always glorifying Krishna. He's getting up at 12 in the midnight when everyone's asleep, and he's speaking into that dictaphone, he called it, dictating machine, to write his books. And then when everyone gets up, he's giving classes. He's meeting with devotees. Or he's writing, which is another form of speech. But one way or another, he's simply a medium through which Krishna is speaking through him, because it's all about Krishna, Krishna philosophy, and everything else. So that's really a real characteristic of the advanced devotees. They don't want to hear anything else, because the vibration about Krishna, beginning, of course, with the holy name, but anything that's directly related to Krishna, Krishna philosophy, and Krishna service, is pure nectar. It's called katamrata. Katamrata means the nectar of talks or sounds that describe Krishna. And it's who wants to give up drinking nectar? The point is that material sound is in the modes of nature. Sometimes it's horrible. Or if you're in that mode, it's great. This word mode, it's a very perfect description. It means that everything you do is colored by that mode. If you fall into the company of people who are in the mode of ignorance, for instance, and then you get into intoxication, and you get into gross sense gratification. So that means the food you like to eat will be in the mode of ignorance. The music you like to hear is in the mode of ignorance, And people in the mode of passion, even, what to speak of the mode of goodness, don't want that food, don't want that music. It's abominable to them, So that's so similarly, those who are in the transcendental, the mode of pure goodness, or Vasudev state, or Krishna conscious, they find that Nirvedam is a perfect. They don't want to know. They're detached, even to the point of, it's abominable. Things or sounds, especially, or anything that is taking their mind away from Krishna. By their force, they make a place that's not Krishna conscious, Krishna conscious. That's how Krishna consciousness spreads. Is by the power of someone who's Krishna conscious can uplift others. And chiefly through the sound vibration. The holy name is speaking, and from that comes everything else. Just like this whole universe is created from sound. The first sound is Om. We're coming up on that part in the 11th canto. In a few weeks, we'll reach that chapter. It's the next chapter or two. How Krishna, everything emanates from sound, the original sound. And then it goes down to the grosser levels so that we see the earth, water, fire, air, and ether like that. So similarly, the great devotees, being fixed in transcendence, vibrate these pure sounds and spiritualize everything. Because the sound is what causes the real influence is propagated through sound. So that's the main question here. But he's also, Arjuna's innocence, Kima Asita, how are these situated? Well, that'll come up. There's a verse, in a few verses hence, where this word Asita is used. How does he walk? Everything about the pure devotee is a characteristic transcendental aspect. Prabhupada had a certain gait, a certain presence, over and above, what he was saying and writing, that you can see this is not an ordinary person, practically floating. I remember, spoke about how he walks. This is one devotee. This is a great story. Early on, it was in Buffalo. Buffalo was somehow an early node of a lot of devotees came out of this Buffalo, the University of Buffalo. So many leaders. Ramapad Maharaj, Burijan, Prabhu, Bhagavan in his heyday, Trivikram Swami, Pralatananda Swami. You can go on and on. So anyway, at that time, there was a devotee named Satya Narayan, who's still prominent in the movement. He's one of the trustees for the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. So he was just coming around. It was 68 or something like that. And Prabhupada, they were meeting Prabhupada, I think, at the airport. And somehow he was coming up an escalator. And everyone is at the top of the escalator. So he's coming up the escalator, and everyone's at the top, and they all bow down, as Prabhupada's coming out. And this new man, Satyanarayan, he wasn't initiated, I forgot his, you know, Karmi name, legal name. He said he kind of peeked, you know, he was bowing down, but he looked up. And Prabhupada came right up that elevator, and he kept going, and he was off the floor. There was a space there. And he was like, you know, he was dumbfounded. But, of course, he's new, so he think, well, amazing, but it's ordinary, you know. This is what it is. So, and he goes on, you know, Prabhupada walks, he's kind of floating along. And years later, you know, he shared this with some others who were there, and he said, oh, you saw it too? You know, it wasn't like he was on some trip or something. You know, acid was very prominent then. So these things would happen, you know, with Prabhupada. But to speak of the glow, you know, a lot of devotees talk about, oh, I couldn't even look at it probably, it was so bright, you know. So how he walks, how he moves, you know, people would comment, even ordinary people in the airport, said, oh, who is that man? You know, he seemed to be glowing, you know. So everything, you know, the walking, the talking, how he sits, everything is characteristic. There's a certain characteristic of transcendence that's unmistakable when you see it. All right, let's go on to some of the answers here. Now, all these verses, I find them very memorable. You can memorize this whole section. There's a whole section here about sthitadhi, or sthitapragya, means fixed consciousness. And we should understand, this is a prerequisite. A prerequisite for advancing is coming to this point of control, where the mind is not being whipped around by the modes of nature. It's called the mode of goodness or pure goodness. So these are all important verses for us. All right, let's go on. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Pujahati yada kaman.
Pujahati yada kaman.
Sarvan parta manogatan.
Sarvan parta manogatan.
Atmanevatmana tushta.
Atmanevatmana tushta.
Sitapragyastadochate.
Sitapragyastadochate.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. Purport. The Bhagavatam affirms that any person who is fully in Krishna consciousness or devotional service of the Lord has all the good qualities of the great sages, whereas a person who is not so transcendentally situated has no good qualifications, because he is sure to be taking refuge in his own mental concoctions. Consequently, it is rightly said herein that one has to give up all kinds of sense desire manufactured by mental concoction. Artificially, such sense desires cannot be stopped. But if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, then automatically sense desires subside without extraneous efforts. Therefore, one has to engage himself in Krishna consciousness without hesitation. For this devotional service will instantly help one onto the platform of transcendental consciousness. The highly developed soul always remains satisfied in himself by realizing himself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. Such a transcendentally situated person has no sense desires resulting from petty materialism. Rather, he remains always happy in his natural position of eternally serving the Supreme Lord. So let's look at this verse. Now, what's the first thing that fascinates me is that all of these material desires, this is kaman, right, and there's unlimited variety, you know, arise from the mind, manogatan. So this mind of ours, which we remember, it's not us. The mind is also external to the soul. But it's very close. You know, the mind and intelligence are very close. And we identify more really with the mind than with the gross body. It's fairly easy to understand we're not the gross body. You know, all you have to say, well, look, if you lose your hand, are you still you? Yeah. Okay, then you're not your body. You know, my hand, my foot, my belly, my head, and who's the my? So you're obviously not the body. But, and it's also true, you can say my mind and my intelligence. But it's harder to do that because we really are close to that mind we identify with. So what is this mind? The mind is kind of this big repository. You know, it really is, you know, scanning, right, through the senses, the ears and the eyes and the other senses, but mostly those two. And, you know, what is pleasure, what is pain? What is pleasure, what is pain? Sankalpa, vikalpa, you know. It's got all kinds of a reservoir of memory of previously pleasurable and painful things. And therefore, there's almost like an instinct, you know, to go for the pleasure and avoid the pain. Now, in the human form of life, we also have the intelligence developed. That's the real distinguishing quality of human life, is it develops intelligence. As Prabhupada said, the big brain, the better brain, right? So, the intelligence is also judging. The mind and the senses want this, but I know from, you know, experience and I've read, it's not good for me, you know. So therefore, there'll be a hesitation. We're not just working on instinct here. There's also some kind of cogitation, reason like that. And then you have a big construct, you know, of society as a whole, for instance, where people, for the greater good of society, which they identify with, they'll go to war and even die happily. You know, they'll be heroes. So that seems to be against the grain of what's pleasing. But it's pleasing to this concocted idea that I'm an American, I'm an Israeli or whatever, you know, and therefore I'm doing the right thing. So that's all coming from the intelligence. You can't tell the dogs to do that, you know, or the cats. You know, they run in packs, but there's no sense of self-sacrifice. Well, there may be something rudimentary, but you get the idea. So anyway, all of this stuff that's in the mind and even in the intelligence is conditioned by our previous activity, by the modes of nature. And that's what he says here. Prajahati yada kama sarvan parta manogatan. We have to give all of that up. Really, you are meant to be reborn with a new identity, meaning you identify now with something completely different. Not the interests of the senses, not the interests of the mind, not even the interests of the intelligence, but the interests of the self, because he talks about the self there. And we know that the self is part and parcel of Krishna. So the self of the self is Krishna. When you serve Krishna, you're really serving your best self-interest. We have to be convinced of that philosophically. And we find, the wonderful thing is, by doing it, experiencing, we actually feel peaceful and happy. There's a definite, a direct experience there, even in the early stages. There's something going on. It's not just some philosophy that in the future is going to make you happy. And that's why Krishna says, Atmaneva Manatushta, right in the next line, he gives you the means by which this is possible. And that is by becoming satisfied in the self. And we know that that really means that you hook up the individual self to the supreme self, Krishna. And Prabhupada makes it clear that that means Krishna consciousness. Now, one thing I've been doing lately, thinking about lately, is that when you see someone, really, you're not seeing the real self, right? You're seeing the external body, and you're seeing some, you know. So really who they are, and we know this, is their consciousness. So when you see Srila Prabhupada, you know, a Murti, or you think, you realize his consciousness is all Krishna consciousness. When he's talking about here, you're always happy in his natural position of eternally serving the Supreme Lord. That's a very detailed thing. There's a whole sarup in there. You know, a spiritual body that is constantly serving, no matter what the external body is doing. You live on two planes. This is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It can only happen when your mind is completely peaceful. You know, and it's not agitated by the modes of nature. And you can be working externally for Krishna, of course, but at the same time, internally, you're serving Krishna in your sarup as a gopi or as a coward boy or whatever it may be. And that service, internal service, gives you complete satisfaction. So does the external service. But the point is, that may not always be there, because the senses are, after all, material. I mean, they're subject to degradation. But the internal service is always there for eternity, you know, and in any state of consciousness. So that's the only way to really reject all of these external desires, these things. They become insignificant. And we can experience some of that even now. You know, when you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, many of you are very new to the process. Some not as new as others. But, you know, there's these four regs, right? Now, to an outsider, to an ordinary person, you know, reading that about what the Hare Krishnas do, it seems inconceivable. An ordinary person who's involved in those four things. In fact, Prabhupada says this is their life. He came to America and said this is their very life. I didn't see how they could give up meat eating, intoxication, gambling, illicit sex. what's going on out there? I mean, so much of what people want to do, of course, they have to make money to do it, you know, but they're just biding their time until they can do one or more of those things. We go downtown to Friday night Harinam. So they're eating the meat, right? They're drinking, you know, and they're, you know, thinking all that they'll cap off the evening with you know what, you know, with a beautiful girl. And the only thing mixing is the gambling. Well, they'll drive a few miles and go out to one of these casinos that the Indians are running, the American Indians.
Barona.
Yeah. What is it?
Barona
Casino. You know, it's all there. Or if they, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of places hidden away in San Diego proper where you can gamble. You know, or just get on the internet and do all you. So the point is that it's happening all the time, everywhere, all around us. And so if people think they have to give all that up, it's inconceivable. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, it becomes possible to the point where it's repulsive. All these things are repulsive. Meat eating, you know, like day one, it becomes repulsive. You know, if you just, you know, a few Sunday feasts and you just read about it, it's just horrible. It's actually amazing that people can eat meat. It takes such a curtain. You have to draw it over. This is Maya. You know, you have to decrease your consciousness and your sensitivity to the animal level to do so many of these things. I read this thing on the internet where they're now going to have on the cigarette packs, I think it's in some states or maybe the whole U.S., big picture, at least half of the pack is going to be some horrible picture, somebody with emphysema, you know, with a hole in his, what do they call it, tracheotomy, you know. Or some baby who's you know, very sick and because his mother smoked, you know, something like that. To try to, you know, get it into people's brain. Don't smoke. Of course, they got the pack. They paid $6 or something for this pack of cigarettes. You know, and then they're going to be convinced not to smoke. It's kind of ironic, working across purposes. But the idea is that you're driven. Unless you have this atmanivatmanatushta, the means to be satisfied in the self, then it's coming at you from all directions, and they'll get you, you know, and you'll become addicted to one or more of these things, and that'll be your life, your ordinary life, heading toward great suffering, not so far in the distant future. So this is the first answer to his question. What are the symptoms? You know, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is fixed? Stitta prajna stadochite. This is kind of a theme here, you know, the refrain. The first thing is, it throws away far, the prajahati means chuck it far away, all of these desires that arise in the mind. Now, just on a little different perspective here, this is Krishna speaking. This is not an easy state to come to. Don't, you know, let's not be naive here, to give up all these material desires. But if you're going to love the Krishna in Vrindavan, in the rasa dance, you have to love this Krishna also. You can't separate the Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita from the Vrindavan Krishna. To think that you can get into Radha Krishna Leela and all this stuff and not come to this point. We're in chapter 2. This is an introduction. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan parmanogatan. This has to be cultivated. That's the goal. No doubt about it. We want to advance so we can experience these higher levels of Krishna consciousness. But we have to do this also. Because otherwise it becomes perverted and it becomes a sahajiya. You know, and you're not really experiencing Ladini Shakti. You're experiencing a reflection of that. And the danger is that becomes the standard. Oh, those uptight Hare Krishnas, those four regs, yeah, they're still at that level. We're already at Radha Krishna. That's all right. Let's try to see if we can go here, 255. And now we'll go to 256. Any questions? Balaramji.
Yeah, so there's that statement of Prabhupada that said that the work now and samadhi later. So,
I think
you can explain that for us.
Yes. The idea is that, we tend to want to experience the highest thing that we read about, right? It's really very amazing, you know, when you read about the states of consciousness that are promised, that are related about, you know, from great acharyas in our books, you know. The ananda, the bliss, the symptoms of ecstasy, you know. We want to get to that. And samadhi, you know, is kind of a shorthand for complete absorption and experience. We can read about it in chapter 6, text 20 to 23, where Krishna describes samadhi. In that state, one experiences this extreme pleasure through transcendental senses. Once attaining it, you think there's no greater gain, all of these things. Sounds great. But one can't, we're not eligible to experience it. Just right now. Maybe a few rare souls, you know, but that means they had experience in previous life. But generally speaking, for the vast majority of us, we have to go step by step. And so much of that is working, because the senses are on fire. This lust, as we'll learn in chapter 3, has captured the senses, the mind, and the intelligence, and is covering us with that. So to think that we can immediately jump to a state where we just stay still and simply think of Krishna in our minds is foolish. Our senses won't let us do that, and the mind won't let us do that. So we need a way of working with our senses and our mind and our intelligence for Krishna. The way I compare it, you know, there's so many freeways, right? Famous California freeways, right? So we're going 75 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour in the wrong direction. You know, we're heading, you know, everyone is. We're heading straight toward a dark end because of illusion and ignorance. So we have to turn around and go the other way. Basically, what we're doing is completely against the grain. You know, we're controlling the senses, not letting them run riot. You know, we're getting up early in the morning rather than sleeping in. We're worshiping God rather than the body. You know, it's just 180 degrees. So you cannot slam on the brakes and turn around 180 degrees. You'll have an accident. So you have to slow down, get in the exit lane, go in one of those, what do they call them? Clover, you know. In other words, they arrange it so that you can gradually turn around and make your turn and then do it that way. So the same thing is there, that we need a way to engage the senses that purifies them. Slowly and surely, but steadily, rather than doing anything abruptly, because it will create havoc. It's right there in the Nectar of Devotion. What is it? Accepting more than one can do. I forget how it's worded. But, you know, Prabhupada gives the example. Immediately I'm going to chant 64 rounds. You know? That's the standard. Yeah, over endeavor, something like that. Yeah, in other words, the standard is 64 rounds a day. We know that. I just read it right in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. You know, Prabhupada wanted it. I'm going to do it. You know? Yeah, Prabhu, you know, it's time to work in the kitchen. Prabhu, I'm chanting my rounds, you know. Well, I remember in New York, I didn't see this. This was like a legendary devotee, you know, in New York Temple many years ago. He read that we have to remember Krishna all the time. So, I don't know if this is Bob Dylan rings a bell, even today, right? So he was famous in the 60s where he invented this thing for the harmonica, so he could play the guitar or whatever, and he could play the harmonica without the hands. It was a stand, you know, that you just put around your neck, held them. So he worked up one of those so he would have a picture of Krishna in front of him all day. Well, he couldn't do much practical service, you know, but at least he was seeing Krishna, you know. So that's an example of this. Samadhi, I'm in samadhi, I'm just looking at Krishna. But what about, you're not really burning out all of the lust that's in the senses and the mind. And eventually that comes and bites you. The mind is very powerful. If you try to repress it, you know, too quickly, you may do it for a short time, but then there'll be a reaction. Yeah, and it'll take you right out of here. It'll take you right out. You go, oh, I got to have that, you know, because and you're discouraged, you know, because you try to do too much too soon. So that's what the idea is. Work now, work hard. You know, there's a story about Jagannath Das Babaji. I think you have so many people come to him, and they wanted to learn the highest things, you know. And he said, okay, first, you know, clean this, do this, you know. And he had them do some practical work to show their sincerity and to burn off all of the impurities. So we're doing well, and there's so much work to do. And there's plenty of time for chanting and relishing, you know. And you find if you do practical work, then the kirtan is sweeter, you know. You feel good because you did your duty, you know. Rather than, well, I chanted 64 rounds. How many did you chant today, Prabhu? I only chanted 16, but I swept the whole floor and I went out on sankirtan. You know, you understand the idea. Go ahead, Prabhu.
At this point, you only made it clear. But you know this... the four rare that you mentioned, outside people, when they hear that, they think You people are really boring. What do you have fun? What do you do?
Yes, yes, that's the other thing. Right, right, right.
You guys are so boring.
Right.
They don't have the fun.
But they don't realize that we have even just a little of this atmanyevavanatushta, and you can actually be satisfied in your life. And what's so wonderful, you see how much you can do without. The real wealthy man is the one who can do without almost anything, and who's satisfied in himself. The Goswamis were the wealthiest. They didn't even have a house, you know, hardly any clothes, and they ate more every other day, and no sleep. You know, what to speak of four rags? I mean, that's not even. And they were the. They were the happiest people on the planet, in bliss. Go be bavra samatabdhi kalola magnomo. What were you going to say?
So the four legs is gambling. Is it just with casinos or what else could be gambling?
Stock market. So many things where your mind gets hung up on putting the bet here. There's so many ways to make a bet. You know. They also used to say mental speculation. Yeah.
This is backtracking, but where you were talking about. Simultaneously being in your swarup, this is way over, but I shouldn't even be asking questions at this, but being in your swarup as well as being externally in the material world, it's hard to balance the idea with the idea that Krishna is unlimited and we're limited into like one space, one frame, one. Yeah.
But we're not really. I mean, the idea is that. We also, being part and parcel of Krishna, when you're in firmly in that Vasudev state, the mode of pure goodness, then the abilities of the mind expand, And one of the things, even people, ordinary people sometimes can do several things at once, but not for long. But the idea is that if you imagine, completely calm mind, and that you have that internal remembrance. Of course, there's always practical examples given. Prabhupada gives the example, I think quoting from Rupa Goswami or the others, of a woman with a paramour, is that, really into the paramour, but she doesn't want the husband to know. So she's doing the housework very nicely, very nicely, very nicely, but inside, when will I meet the paramour? thinking. So, if we can just imagine for a moment being so in love with Krishna, that you just, there's no question of forgetting him. It's just like that. I remember when I was in love when I was 8. I swear, I've never had a such an. Actually, I tell this story. I was 8 or 7 or 8, and it was a boy. We were friends at camp. And for some reason, I even remember his name, Stephen Lee. And it was only for like a few weeks in the camp. And I couldn't be without that boy. I would play with him, and he was my friend, and he was smart. And somehow or other, I just linked up to that boy, And when he wouldn't come someday, I remember I was rolling on the ground crying. And one of the counselors said, "We haven't seen this much, We never saw that kind of a thing." And then time goes on, and you go back to school, And I tried to keep it up with him, but It didn't last. He was in a different grade than I was. I think it was one grade ahead. I didn't see him that much, and after a while, it dissipated. But I was always thinking of that kid. Even when I was home, I was thinking, when am I going to see Stephen Lee again? It's a perverted reflection. But the thing is that imagine that for Krishna. That's the whole idea. But 100 more times, so that it's just there's no question of forgetting. There's this nice verse of there's always verses in the Bhagavatam describing the state of the Mahabhagavats. What is their consciousness? So the first one is like this. It says, Tribhavana vibhavahetave pukunta smitana jitama suradi bhiva mrigyat. Nachalati bhagavat padada vinda lavana mishadam apiyaksa vaishnavagraha. Nice beat. This is Bhishma's meter. Bhishma, when he's lying on the battlefield, he uses his meter. So he says, the great devotees, their constant remembrance of the lotus feet of Krishna, is such that even for all the wealth in the three worlds, tribhavana vibhavahetave, for the sake of that, if they had to agree to forget those feet for one split second, they wouldn't do it. That's how much they're attached to remembering Krishna's lotus feet. And then the next verse describes that by that remembrance of those lotus feet, and this is something we should remember, it's very esoteric. The toes of the lotus feet of Krishna are emanating this very vast effulgence, very very soothing effulgence for the heart. So it's a Bhagavata Uddhavikramanga Shaka. Shaka means the toes, and Naka is the toenails. Bhagavata Uddhavikramanga Shaka, Nakamani Chandakaya Narastatape. So just like the moonshine, you know, I've never gone into the desert. But I can imagine you go into the desert, you go about 100 miles east of here, and you're in the middle of the desert. And during the day, it's unbearably hot. You try to find a rock, you know, whatever. But then when the night comes and the soothing moonshine comes, it can be, you know, really relieves your suffering of the day. So that's what's described here. Chandakaya Narastatape. All the burning sufferings of this world, the threefold miseries, are completely eradicated. So then he says, Riddhikatam upasidatam. In the heart of such a great devotee, how can there ever arise any kind of distress? You know? Because he's always drinking that moonshine of Krishna's lotus toenails. It's soothing to the heart. Riddhikatam upasidatam naksa, prabhavati chanda hivodate katapa. It's just like the moon having arisen after a hot day in the desert. You know? And then the last verse, really wonderful. It says, Vitratati vidhiyam nayasya saksha dhadada vishabha hatao vigaga nasha pranaya vasanaya pranaya vasanaya pranaya vasanaya tritang vipadma sabhavati bhagavata pradhana ukta. So pradhana means the foremost. So he says, now what does Krishna do on his side? Because bhakti means reciprocation. So here's this devotee who's come to the state of always remembering the lotus feet, you know, and being completely satisfied to the state of question of giving up everything else just to remember those lotus feet. So on his side, Krishna, whose kindness is measured, you know, this is called the what to speak of argument. In other words, you give an example and you say, there's this example, what to speak of the other thing. So he says, he's so kind that he's given us his holy name that if you chant it even indifferently, you get rid of all your sinful reactions. Then what to speak of someone who's not chanting indifferently, but who's just so in love with Krishna that he can't forget him, and who out of the rope, with the rope of love, has tied the lotus feet of the Lord to his heart, then how can the Lord ever give up such a devotee? In other words, he reciprocates completely with such a devotee. So that's an extreme example of this, you know, that devotee is completely satisfied within himself. And this, the idea of sense gratification doesn't even cross his mind. It doesn't even cross the mind. Complete satisfaction, just loving and serving and remembering Krishna at every moment, internally and externally. Okay, we have a little more time. Let's go on, because these verses all kind of hang together. They go in a series here. Dukeshvanu vignamana sukeshu vigataspaha vitaraga bhayakrodha stitadhir munuruchyate. Okay, so here the word is sthita dhirmuni. It really means the same thing, sthita pragya, same idea. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. Purport. The word muni means one who can agitate his mind in various ways for mental speculation, without coming to a factual conclusion. It is said that every muni has a different angle of vision, and unless a muni differs from other munis, he cannot be called a muni in the strict sense of the term. Nasav rishir yasya matam abhinnam. Mahabharata Vanaparva 3.13, 1.17. But a sthita dhir muni, as mentioned herein by the Lord, is different from an ordinary muni. The sthita dhir muni is always in Krishna consciousness, for he has exhausted all his business of creative speculation. He is called Prashanta Nikshesa Manoratantara, Sotra Ratna 43. Or one who has surpassed the stage of mental speculations and has come to the conclusion that Lord Sri Krishna or Vasudeva is everything. Vasudevam Sarvamiti Samahatma Satulama. He is called a muni fixed in mind. Such a fully Krishna conscious person is not at all disturbed by the onslaughts of the threefold miseries. For he accepts all miseries as the mercy of the Lord. Thinking himself only worthy of more trouble due to his past misdeeds. And he sees that his miseries, by the grace of the Lord, are minimized to the lowest. Similarly, when he is happy, he gives credit to the Lord, thinking himself unworthy of the happiness. He realizes that it is due only to the Lord's grace, and that he is in such a comfortable condition and able to render better service to the Lord. And for the service of the Lord, he is always daring and active, and is not influenced by attachment or aversion. Attachment means accepting things for one's own sense gratification, and detachment, meaning aversion here, is the absence of such sensual attachment. But one fixed in Krishna consciousness has neither attachment nor detachment, because his life is dedicated in the service of the Lord. Consequently, he is not at all angry, even when his attempts are unsuccessful. Success or no success, a Krishna conscious person is always steady in his determination. So this is a very rich purport, and we'll explore it now for a few minutes. So, undisturbed. So there's two sides to the coin. One is disturbance by attraction, and the other is disturbance by aversion. When things are pleasing to our senses, then if we're just ordinary, you know, persons, we'll be attracted. We'll try to enjoy that. And conversely, if things are displeasing, we'll try to avoid it. Right? This is called the dualities of this world. Duality of heat and cold, pleasure and pain. So here, exactly the opposite is, if there's some misery that comes, it doesn't disturb the mind. In other words, the body's going to suffer one way or another, sometimes grievously. But the mind, if you've trained it in Krishna consciousness, can remain fixed, even up to the point of death, which is the greatest disturbance of all. After all, that's the final exam. So therefore, we need to train now, when we're not faced with death. So even amidst the threefold miseries, or later when there is happiness, that's the other disturbance, right? Sukeshu vigataspaha. So in the middle of pleasing things, vigataspaha, you give up the desire for them. You can do without. Why? Atmanivapanatushta. Because you're satisfied within. You see? That protects you both from disturbance in so-called misery or allurement when there's temptation. And free from attachment, fear, and anger. Now, this is a phrase that comes up again and again in the Gita. It must be four or five times at least. Vita, raga, bhaya, krodha. You can remember that, just that one phrase. Means free of, vita, raga, which is kama, material desire, which produces bhaya. Wherever there is raga, there's going to be fear and anger. Inevitably. You know, what's going on in this world? There's so much fear and there's so much anger going on. You know, this is the age of terrorism. That's fear, right? We've been made afraid for our very lives, you know? And out of that fear comes anger. We're angry at the one who's making us afraid, or supposedly making us afraid. The guys at the top, they manipulate us that way, right? But then what happens? Then they can get you to do anything. If you're afraid for your life, oh, please protect me, you see? But it all starts with karma. The guys, who are manipulating, they're full of this material desire. More millions. Why should I only have 100 million? Let me have $1 billion. You know, why should I be those, you know, one of those? There's no end to it. It never ends, this greed. And so, if you can give up the raga on a personal level, if you can remain detached, just see how free you are. All these advertisements, these come on, buy this, do this, come here, go there, you know, squeeze that, you laugh at it, isn't it? I mean, how many of us are here, you know, when you walk down the street and you see a billboard, whatever they're selling, are you really tempted now? I'm not. It's just like, they're pouring ghee into the ashes as far as the devotees are concerned. Advertising doesn't work on the devotees. Unless it's for something to have to do with the iPod, then they may get something. But I'm just kidding. But the point is, there's a few things that were... But basically, forget it. I'm not going to buy a house, you know. These poor guys are trying to sell this house back here for now a year. Or one of these condos that they built behind us. They built 24 condos down the road on Hornblende. You may pass them if you walk to the beach on Hornblende. 24. A whole bank went bankrupt because they can't sell them. The San Diego National Bank is no longer in existence. They financed it. So what do they mean? Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's the height of the real estate boom, you know. We build it, they'll buy it, you know. They built it, nobody bought it. So, you know, somebody really is in trouble for that. They're sitting there vacant. Maybe, you know, they try to make it look like they're occupied, but they're not. One or two, maybe. So, but, you know, we're not worried about that. We're cool. You know, we're living on Pacific Beach. We're living on Hornblende. You know, we have our little room here. You know, we got, you know, some problems, but it's nothing like that. You know, and we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Bol, and I don't worry. I got no condo, no problem. You know, fancy clothes, who cares? You know, prasadam, yes, we need some nice prasadam. But the point is, it's very simple life, and it's exactly like this. You know, stitadir, munirichate, you can become peaceful and happy that way because of the inside. You hook into the inner reservoir of pleasure. Krishna, it's directly, but it's something to be strived for because it's not easy to give up all, you know, sarvan partikman, give up all. So we have to strive for that. Now let's look at this purport. This is really rich. So, first of all, Prabhupada's quoting from the Mahabharata. What is that? How's it start? Yeah, but what's the first line? Dharma sattvam nihukam. That's the third line. Tarko patishta. Tarko apatishta shutayo vibinna nasa vrishiya samatam nibinnam dharma sattvam nihuram mahaya mahajano yena katasapanta. Prabhupada's quoting this verse, although he doesn't quote all the Sanskrit. So, the first line, you know, is about arguing back and forth, you'll never get you anywhere. He mentions that, right? The various mental speculation without coming to a factual conclusion. This is called tarka. The Western philosophers have been doing it since for 2,000 years, you know, since the Greeks. They have this theory, that theory comes, then someone comes with another theory, and they go on like that. And so that you can't really be a muni, or a rishi, or a philosopher, unless you come up with something new. Who wants to just, you know, repeat what the other guy said? It's all material, you know. So this is called tarko apratishta, means there's no solid foundation. And shruti yovabhinna, even the shrutis, we're learning that in the morning class. Krishna's saying, right, don't be bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas. It's the Vedas. It emanated from Krishna. So somebody is going to say, without benefit of the truth here, that this is the actual meaning of the Vedas. This all of this instruction of going to the heavenly planets. This is called Veda Vadarata. And, you know, they're an established group, and they have their own organizations. So that's called Shruti Yovibhinna. They seem to differ. They seem to differ about what is the ultimate truth. Some say Agni is supreme. Some say Indra is supreme. Some say Shiva is supreme. How do we know what's what? We need the Acharya. But so that's the point of this verse. And then the second line, which is Nasa Rishi Yasamattam Nabindam, that he emphasizes here. Rishi and Muni mean the same thing here. That you can't really be known as a good Rishi unless you differ from the other Rishis. You see? You have the Heidegger school, the Kierkegaard school, I have the existentialist school, Jean Paul Sartre, da 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 da. You know, then you get fame and wealth and like that. You know, you have your school. So even in the old days, the Karma Mimamsakas had their champion and Jaimini and all. It's all there in the Vedic culture also. So, then Prabhupada says, Nasav Rishi, he quotes that line, and how can you find out? You have to find someone who really knows Dharma. Dharma Satattvam Nihito Gumhayam means is located in the heart of the Mahajan, the great soul who knows Krishna. Yena Gata Sapat, follow the path. You know, we're supposed to follow the Bhakti Marga. Marga is a path, meaning just follow in the footsteps of the great Acharyas. The path is already worked out. If you try to figure it out on your own, you're working with your relative mind, you'll never be able to do it. It's a receptive process, descending knowledge. So that Prabhupada makes that point. Exhausted all his business of creative speculation, he's received the knowledge, and then he repeats, realizes, and then repeats it. Now then he quotes from Stotra Ratna. Now this is really a nice verse too. Vashanta Nikshesha Manoratantara. So the whole verse is like this. Vavanta Mevanuchadan Nadantara. Prashanta Nikshesa Manoda Tantara. Kadaham Aikantika Nitya Kinkara. Paharshi Yasyami Sanata Jivitam. So a beautiful verse. It says that Bhavantam Evanucharan Narantara. When one serves you without deviation, Narantara means without end, then the mind becomes very peaceful. Prashanta. Nikshesa means without end. The mind is on this chariot. Manorata. You know, we have this kind of the idea of the train of thought. You know, it'll take you right out of wherever you happen to be, and you'll be in a train of thought and be absent-minded. So the mind is like that. It has. It goes on. Oh my God. I'm sorry. So, but here's the prashanta. That train stops. The mind becomes satisfied. Mano ratantara. Kadaham aikantika nityakinkara. When will I consider myself and when will I get the position of being your humble servant? Paharshi yasyami. I'll be completely jubilant. Sanata jivitam. Sanata jivitam is used for a wife who has a nice husband. She's sanat. And therefore she's very peaceful. You know, so we can become sanat. We can live very peacefully by recognizing Krishna as our master. Dhanata means master or lord. So this is a perfect verse describing the aspiration for dasya ras, for being situated nicely and permanently as a servant of Krishna. The higher rasas come on the basis of that, but first comes this sense of dasya ras. I'm sorry, we have run out of time. Hare Krishna. We will pursue this tomorrow, going on to text 57. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.